I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Pour some sweet, 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 sweet cider in the glass. Another season's harvest.
That's Sweet Cider by the group Gathering Time. Thanks to Simply Folk host Stephanie Elkins for the music. We're talking apples now on this edition of Food Friday.
They're an American icon, and they're in season now. The apple is one of the most widely grown and eaten fruits in the world.
After over the last four centuries, 14,000 varieties have been cultivated. These days, we mostly just eat those basics. Golden Delicious, Macintosh, Granny Smith.
Well, here to explain how that happened and maybe why it's starting to change is Erica Janik, freelance writer and producer and editor of Wisconsin Life. She's the author of the book Apple, A Global History. Erica, thanks for coming by the studio.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Now, we intro'd by saying apples are an American icon. And of course, there's a saying, apples are as American as apple pie. No, that's not right, is it?
Close enough.
Anyway, apples, American, are they?
They are not. You know, I think that's something that's pretty interesting about the apple is that apples have really managed to make themselves at home basically all over the world, and so that they do really seem like a native fruit. But apples are actually from very far away from here. They're actually from Kazakhstan in Central Asia, and all of the apples that we know today come from this one mountain range in Central Asia. And it's really just fascinating to think of how they spread from this area and have really made themselves at home everywhere.
Wait, so all the varieties of apples that we know of today come from one mountain range?
That is correct.
That's mind-blowing. So wait, how do all those varieties end up on one mountain? And then, I guess, how did they get here?
Well, actually, you talked about how there's thousands of varieties of apples. So apples kind of, the way that they reproduce, they're kind of like humans in the way that they do it. So, you know, when you have children, your children don't look exactly like you. And that's kind of what an apple tree does as well. So all of the apples that it produces are not exactly the same apple as the parent tree. So the apples that are actually growing in Kazakhstan are a wide variety of wild apple types. And as the apple has spread around the world, there's been thousands and thousands of new varieties, just as there's like thousands and thousands, millions of people. Mm-hmm. It's the same kind of idea.
And are all of those, you know, baby children apples, do they taste good? Or are some of them you think, oh, that's one I don't want to duplicate it again?
You know, they do. Some will taste good and some will taste bad. And that's really because if you think about a wild apple, kind of has a different agenda than a human. For a wild apple tree, their main objective in life is to reproduce. And the main part of an apple that reproduces is the core. Whereas for humans, we really want a lot of sweet flesh to eat. And so for an apple, that's kind of inefficient to grow all of that flesh. And so you'll find a lot of apples that actually are pretty small, mostly core, and don't taste that good.
So let's get to how they got to America. Was that Johnny Appleseed guy? Is that just a folk legend, or is that a real guy?
Johnny Appleseed is a real guy. His name is actually John Chapman, and he was living in Massachusetts in the 1700s, and he started moving westward, and he was planting apple seedlings, and he wasn't, you know, as I said, apple trees don't produce true to type. So he was actually just planting a bunch of seeds, and all these different varieties of wild apples were popping up all over the place. And in a lot of these states in the Midwest, which is primarily where he was, part of the rules of getting your settlement as a settler was that you had to have an apple orchard. And so he was very smart. He was kind of keeping ahead of that line of white settlement. And so settlers would get there and he would say, well, I already have your orchard for you. And so he just kept moving and planted thousands and thousands of apples.
So was he just economically savvy, or was he like obsessive about the apples?
A little bit of both. He was also a Swedenborgian, which is kind of a nature worshiping religion. And so he actually saw planting apples as part of spreading his faith.
Wow.
I've never heard of that faith before.
It's named after Emanuel Swedenborg. Maybe you should have a whole segment about
Swedenborgian. I was just thinking that. Exactly. Well, so we were talking earlier, too, about, you know, how for a long time it seems as though we just had these few varieties of apples that you get in the grocery store, like your Macintosh apples, your Granny Smiths. That's starting to change. But what happened where we had just these few varieties in grocery stores for so long?
Well, that's actually kind of a newer phenomenon. That's really a 20th century thing where you'll only find about, what, maybe 10 varieties of apples? Because in the past, apples were a really local specialty. There were local varieties that people just had in their town or in their backyard or were known in their state. But as apples became a real global commodity, it's just more efficient to only grow you know, one type of apple in your orchard. And so commercial apple growers were really looking for apples that could transport well overseas, that remain shiny and crisp and sweet, because that's what they thought people wanted. And really, the looks were actually more important than how the apple tastes. And if you've had a Red Delicious, you know that it's not terribly delicious. But it looks absolutely beautiful. And it's been bred to look absolutely beautiful. And so this is why you don't really find a lot of apple varieties. But this has been starting to change. People are more interested in these heritage varieties. And so you're finding all kinds of orchardists all over the country and all over the world that are kind of bringing back a lot of these older varieties and rediscovering them. You know, sometimes there'll be an old apple orchard or an old apple tree just growing on a piece of land or in a national park. And, you know, that's really allowing us to tap into our apple heritage.
How long have apples been a big deal here in Wisconsin?
Apples have really been a big deal maybe since the late 19th century. Growers actually had a hard time getting apples to grow here in Wisconsin because our climate is quite cold, and apple trees would often die off. And so there was a lot of investment in apple research in about the mid-19th century, and they were looking at kind of Russian apple varieties. And you find a lot of the apples that come to Wisconsin and Minnesota are these kind of Siberian apples that obviously can survive very cold conditions. And so this kind of feeds the apple industry in Wisconsin. And by the late 19th century, Wisconsin growers are feeling, you know, pretty confident in their crop, and apples become kind of a big thing here in Wisconsin.
How easy is it to raise a productive apple tree? I'm assuming it's more than just dropping a seed in the ground and hoping for the best.
It's actually quite challenging to produce an apple tree. As I said, you know, apples don't produce true to type. The only way to get the same type of apple, so if you have a Granny Smith apple, the only way to get another Granny Smith apple tree is actually by grafting, which is basically cloning an apple tree. And so all of the apples that you're having, so if you have a Granny Smith, for example, every single one, every tree in the world, every apple is actually a clone of the original Granny Smith apple that was found by Maria Ann Smith, a real granny, in Australia in the 1860s. So it's kind of a fascinating thing about apples. And so they are kind of challenging. They do require a lot of care in order to actually get the variety that you're hoping to achieve.
Now, you said that's starting to change, that we do have these, you know, core varieties of apple, pardon the pun, but and there are all these heritage apple trees out there now that are flourishing. Tell us about some of the new kinds of apples that we're starting to see.
Well, I think, you know, we're seeing some new but very old apples. I mean, one of the ones that you'll find sometimes at farmers markets in Wisconsin is the Wolf River, which is actually a Wisconsin apple. It was found in the 19th century and was pretty common in Wisconsin in the 19th century, but then you really didn't see it anymore other than maybe some farmers that still had one on their property. But you're starting to see more of them, and I think that's pretty exciting. I think you're just seeing a lot of the return of some of these older varieties. There was a Milwaukee apple, for example, and there's a group in Milwaukee, Slow Food, that's actually trying to bring back this Milwaukee apple. So that's one of the ones that you're going to see. You'll also see some English varieties, things like the Cox Orange Pippin. These are varieties that were, you know, really widely popular in the past and are really starting to make a comeback.
Well, historically, apples, and even today, apples aren't just for eating. What were early Americans doing to drink the apples?
Most of these apples actually were being drunk and not eaten. And so in colonial America, really the beverage of choice was hard cider. And this was in part because almost everyone had an apple tree. And an apple tree produces way more apples than a normal person can actually eat. Maybe there's someone who can actually eat all those apples, but way more than a normal family can actually consume before they start to go bad. And so a great way to preserve your apples is to turn them into hard cider. And they also happen to be very easy to turn into alcohol, because if you mash them up, they pretty much start bubbling and fermenting fairly quickly. And so you find all over colonial America, everyone is drinking hard cider. Children are drinking hard cider. Adults are drinking hard cider. President John Adams actually had a glass of hard cider every morning because he considered it good for his health. And, you know, at a time when milk was unpasteurized and water was often polluted, hard cider was kind of a safe choice. And this really was a very popular drink through much of the 19th century.
Now, Erica, I know that besides being a passionate historian, you're also a passionate cook. And I wonder what is some of your favorite stuff to do with apples that you pick?
I like doing something so basic, but I just really like making apple crisps. And it's in part because I'm lazy about making crusts. but I also just think a crisp is really a fantastic way to highlight a lot of delicious apple flavors. I also like baked apples. What else have I done with apples? I'm making applesauce too. I think applesauce is so easy to make. And, you know, I remember always buying it at the store and then realizing that I could make it and just, you know, a matter of minutes, basically. And it tasted so much better. And, I think that's something that almost anybody can do just with a pot.
I'm a big fan of making crisp, again, due to crust laziness. What kind of apples are your favorites to put in a crisp?
My favorites, I actually like to do, I'm a big fan of the sweet tart apples, both for eating just out of hand as well as for baking. But when I am baking, I do like to have a combination of some of the really just sweet apples and then pairing them with something kind of crisp too. So something like a Granny Smith for that crispness and tartness. And then, you know, maybe something like a Jonathan, which is more uniformly sweet. It doesn't really have that crisp edge. A Pink Lady has a little bit of crispness to it, but they also pair very nicely together.
I love the apple names. They all kind of sound like bands to me.
They
the Pink
do.
Lady, and then what was the Cox Pippin something?
Oh, the Cox Orange Pippin.
Cox Orange Pippin. I love them.
Yeah.
I don't know. Where do the names come from?
Lots of them come from the place where they were found, the person who found them. Some of them are, you know, some of the words actually, you know, refer to various things. Apple seeds are often called pips, so the pippin. Yeah, you know, I think it's just kind of a lot of these apples were found by somebody. So it's almost, you know, like naming a star or whatever. Like you just name it after, you know, whatever inspires you in that time.
You know, we were talking about being a lazy cook. Do you feel like you have to peel the apple to use it? I hate peeling apples, but I love apples and I love baking with apples, but I'm not a fan of peeling.
I do not peel my apples.
Good.
Generally, though, if I am getting, you know, apples are a fruit that is very prone to a lot of insects and disease. And so depends on what kind of apples you're getting and how you feel about that. But, you know, some people do peel the ones that you'll find conventional apples in the grocery store because they might have more pesticides on them than ones you might find at your farmer's market.
Are they still coming up with new kinds of apples today in our last 30 seconds?
They are definitely still coming up with new kinds of apples. Actually, the race to produce new fruit is just as intense as the race to produce, you know, the newest phone or the newest bit of technology. It takes a long time to do it, though, so perhaps it doesn't seem as lightning fast as other things.
All right. Well, Erica, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Got some bacon to do this weekend, I think all of us here. Well, that was Erica Janik, freelance writer, producer, and editor of Wisconsin Life. She's also the author of Apple, A Global History.